Well, hello everyone, and welcome to this week's lesson, which is all about our metabolism and our weight. Hello, Dr. Yasmina. I know this is a topic that is very close to your heart.
Hi, Amelia, and hello everyone, and thank you again for finding time to sit through another session with us. I really appreciate your efforts.
And this is a big one today. I mean, metabolic health, you've worked in one of the metabolic hotspots in Australia before, haven't you?
Yeah, Mount Druitt. I learned a lot in Mount Druitt. So if you want to learn about pre-diabetes, diabetes, what happens if you do nothing? You go to Mount Druitt. So I've done my stint. Yeah.
Wow, amazing. Gosh, well, that's a whole other conversation, isn't it? But look, all of us are here today because we want to unlock our energy. We want to understand what our metabolic health looks like, what the markers that we have measured are telling us, and then most importantly, what we're actually going to be doing about it. So today we're going to really be using these biomarker results to explore our very own metabolism and uncover these imbalances that could be driving down our energy and driving up our weight. We're going to find out if we are actually metabolically healthy and flexible. That's that concept of switching between burning glucose and fat easily, or whether we might be maybe borderlining on insulin resistance, pre-diabetes, or maybe even tipping over into that type 2 diabetes category. So how it's going to work it tonight, guys, is that the first half of the session will be a deep dive into the key biomarkers that give us these insights into our metabolism and our metabolic health, which namely this HbA1c, our fasting glucose, insulin, cholesterol, a couple of inflammation markers, some important liver markers as well, and that NAFLD, that non-alcoholic fatty liver disease markers too. We might mention a few other markers, but those ones are really the main ones. And then in the se second half of the session, we're going to be getting really practical with the strategies that we would like you to follow and the key principles throughout the next 8 weeks. So this will include any supplements to take if your metabolism and weight is an issue for you, some really targeted nutrition and exercise strategies, and many of which are already baked into the program. In addition to this video, there is also going to be a topic cheat sheet that you can download with all the key takeouts for today as well. So lots to get through. Are you ready to go, Dr. Yasmina?
Yep, ready to go.
All right, fantastic. And guys, please, if you've got your iScreen results handy, it'd be really useful as we go through these markers. So, Dr. Yasmina, many of us are on this program because our energy is low and our weight is a challenge for us. It might be stubborn, it might not be shifting. Things that used to work for us to lose weight aren't working anymore. One of the biggest causes of this decline is metabolic health. Can you please explain what exactly is metabolic health and what causes it to decline?
All right, so metabolic health is basically all about how you use energy. So it's your fuel economy, like what comes in, what you do with it, what's your output, and if you have the spare bit, what do you do with it, right? So, and as I said, it's about fuel. And in our reproductive years, we are geared to use carbohydrates really, really well. In fact, you have a certain carbohydrate requirement to be able to ovulate. And for really young women, if you drop this really quite low, you can lose your periods and that you can have fertility issues. So, we're geared to look for those carbohydrates and use them well. The glitch comes in perimenopause and menopause when we switch to a different kind of fuel. So, and that different kind of fuel, it's a little bit like you're used to using petrol and now you need diesel and wrong fuel in the engine, you kind of seize up. So all of a sudden, we are surrounded by this carbohydrate, lots of processed carbohydrate. We are used to using it, but we're not actually metabolizing it like we used to. We have a higher protein requirement. If we continue with that high carb intake, We'll be driving our insulin up, we'll be driving our cholesterol up, we'll be moving into that pre-diabetic state, and we'll be reorganizing our weight and piling it around the middle. So our change in hormones around perimenopause and menopause contributes to
So
that.
that drop in estrogen seems to have this protective element of for carbohydrates. So when we're younger, we can have the bowls of pasta, we can have lots of bread, we can have the rice, we can have those larger meals that have those higher glycemic loads. But what you're saying is our engines, when we hit that perimenopause and menopause, our engines have shifted and they actually don't need that sort of carbohydrates. They don't require that carbohydrate. They're looking for more protein. And so if we keep feeding them that carbohydrate, that's when we see some of this metabolic dysfunction. That's when we see our body not coping very well with these carbohydrates. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, if you want to get to biochem, so glucose is a it's easy access, it's fast to burn, it's fast fuel, but if we can't cope with it very well anymore. So if we want to use that fat that we've accumulated, that's more difficult to access. We need to go that those mitochondria, which are the little power engines that our cells have, we need to put them to work. And some of the strategies that you put in the program that revolve around the meals and intermittent fasting, etc., they're geared to coach those mitochondria to become better at using fat for fuel. Because what we want is, yes, you can still use your glucose, your carbs, but you're also becoming really good at accessing that fat. And then there's the protein that you mentioned, and protein should mainly be used for structural and repair purposes, right? So that's what we want.
Okay. So metabolism and weight is an absolutely huge topic. And I know we're going to be touching on it multiple times. And many of the members have joined the program for that exact reason. So tonight, I'd like to deep dive or begin with a deep dive into the main biomarkers. And while you talk us through these biomarkers, I'll share my screen so that we can go through and see them. And I know we've touched on this a little bit in the live workshop as well, but I just want to make sure everyone is kind of clear and across these most important biomarkers. So if I will just share my screen now, and for those of you listening and not watching, you can just pull up your results and go to the metabolic section of your results. And if you're in the UK, it will look a little bit different. And the UK gets slightly different measurements, but you can still follow along. All right. So, do you want to just tell us where we've got fasting glucose, insulin, HOMA, HbA1c? What's the most important one that, as a doctor, when someone comes in, what's the most important one you go straight to?
Actually, I'll start from the least important one
Ah,
because
okay.
that's the one that gets done most often.
Sure.
So, most of you would have had your fasting glucose done by your GP, and a lot of people come and to ask, no, but my glucose is okay. It really is absolutely fine. Well, that fasting glucose is a snapshot in time. And it's something that your body fights really, really, really hard to maintain. So it will stay normal for a long time while there are lots of other things happening under the hood that are affecting your metabolic health. So your fasting glucose should be 5 or below. As I said, it's not a great marker. Unfortunately, it's the one that's done more often. Alone, fasting glucose does not tell you a whole lot about your metabolic health.
Okay, and you want it to be 5 or below. And by the way, Terry B, if you are watching this, these are your results tonight. So Terry, you're going to be our model tonight. And Terry's unfortunately are at 6.4. So we've already seen some dysfunction that we will need to address.
The next one is HbA1c. So in that letter soup, HB stands for your hemoglobin. A1c, just imagine that's a splatter mark. And so really that is about sugar splatter marks that are left on the proteins in your bloodstream. And if you are leaving lots of sugar splatter marks, on proteins, you are damaging proteins. That's bottom line. We're looking at hemoglobin here, but the same thing's happening to other proteins, though even the ones that are, making the walls of your tiny little blood vessels, capillaries, etc. So HbA1c, I would really like to be 5 or below. If your HbA1c is above 5.5, you have an issue that is considered as a pre-diabetic. And type 2 diabetes tends to be HbA1c greater than 6.5.
And
But
just to
even
jump in for a sec here, guys, you'll have two HbA1c readings. You'll have one that's got the percentage mark next to it, and then the other one, just ignore that one. We tend to just always look at the percentage. And what I like about this one for us everyday people is you've got these kind of quite hard numbers where you're like, please try to get it below 5.5, you're really in that pre-diabetic. You're probably pre-diabetic, and 6.5. You're probably in that type 2 diabetes. So this is quite an important one. It also is a measurement over time. So if you've had a lot of blood sugar spikes over the last 3 months, then this number is what is elevated. That's what you will see.
exactly. And even now pathology companies have included a comment that says microvascular, so that is your little blood vessels, get damaged at HbA1c of 5.5 and above. So that is why we put those numbers out, and that is why we really want you to pay attention to them.
So basically, if someone is watching this now, a member is watching this now, and those that HbA1c is above 5.5, would you say that we are seeing signs of this metabolic inflexibility already?
Yes. And look, sometimes strange things happen, and you can go, so what have I been doing over the last 3 months? And maybe last 3 months have been particularly stressful, and you haven't slept, you've eaten badly. And maybe what we're seeing is a reflection of your life over the last 3 months. Maybe that's not you all the time, but this is really calling out to you and saying, hey, at least looking at the last 3 months, things haven't been great. It's time to take these numbers seriously and start looking after yourself.
Okay. So the other interesting one, I think, is HOMA. Do you want to, is that one that, what do you think is the next most? Is it insulin or HOMA that you tend to look at next?
Okay, I'll go with insulin.
Okay.
Insulin is probably the one that your GP is least likely to do. But I think it's very important because that's the one that's is an early sign and starts changing really, really early, right? So if we were to travel back in your 20s, and if you were fit and healthy, we would be finding your insulin about 2 or 3, right? Now that you are perhaps in your 40s, 50s, 60s, we are aiming for your insulin to be 4 or 5. So what's that telling me? That you don't have to produce a whole heap of insulin to signal to yourself, to your cells, hey, clean up the glucose out of the bloodstream, take it away so it doesn't cause any damage. If you're 6 or and above, your body is starting to whisper and just saying, hey, there's no damage. You're not very likely to be causing serious damage at the moment, but it's time to start thinking about your metabolic health. And if you're 10 and above, you are insulin resistant. So
Wow,
it,
that's so different. Look at these markers here. It's saying 3 to 25 is in the green zone, but you're saying your optimal range is down around that 10 or below. That's incredible.
So, and you know what? You will, if you have had your bloods done by different labs, some of them will note, have notes saying 10 to 14, consider insulin resistance. They'll change the numbers in their comments. But really, if you're 10 and above, that you do have a component of insulin resistance.
Okay, that's really interesting. Much tighter. Okay, because I was looking here at Terry going, oh, it's so strange that she's got all these really high markers, but then her insulin is healthy. But you look at that and say an insulin of 19 is not healthy.
No, no.
Okay.
And then Amelia Homer, it's a, not a separate test. It is a calculation. And
of what?
Basically, yeah, of how hard your body needs to work to regulate your glucose. So Homer looks at your blood glucose and looks at your insulin, or the different calculators use your blood glucose or HbA1c, mm-hmm. which kind of reflect the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and look at insulin. So how hard do you have to work, how much insulin you have to produce to regulate that blood sugar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the more insulin you have to produce, the, you know, the more insulin resistant you are. And that's what Homer really measures.
Which I think that's a really interesting one, because you can have markers in the green in fasting glucose and insulin, and you kind of think you're doing okay. But when you actually put it through the Homer calculation, it says, even though your fasting glucose and insulin are kind of okay, the body's working really hard to keep those levels in the normal zone.
So basically, if you are less than one, you are an absolute superstar. If you are between 1 and 1.9, you are doing all right.
Yep.
If you have between 2 and 2.5, so that's that body whispering, you need to start thinking about your mm-hmm. metabolic health. And if you are above 2.5, this is a message that you are likely insulin resistant and some serious work needs to be done.
Okay, got it. So I just want to give you a quick analogy and check that I'm on the right track. All right, you're somebody who has noticed some changes, has noticed your weight's shifted. You have a bowl of pasta or you have one of your normal meals, and internally what happens is your blood glucose starts to rise because you've just eaten this pasta, for example, or this big piece of white fluffy bread, a sandwich, a focaccia. And because it's a simple carbohydrate, the body has broken it down really quickly into blood glucose. And so your body senses that the blood glucose levels are rising. Glucose is acidic. So if it gets too acidic, that's why we, you know, diabetics end up going blind or losing fingers, because they're literally burning their capillaries. So your blood glucose levels rise and then your body goes shivers. So then it triggers insulin, which comes and acts a little bit like a bus that kind of mops up the, you know, or binds with the glucose, and then it goes and stores it, either puts it in our muscles or takes it to our liver or deposits it in our fat cell, turns it into a lipid. If you're starting to become metabolically inflexible, am I correct in saying that your body releases insulin, but it kind of stops working? So, and I think I've heard you use the analogy of a key. A rusty key.
Yeah, so insulin basically opens the gate to the cells to take up glucose, right? So insulin opens the gate, then glucose can enter the cells, and once glucose is in the cell, it's out of the bloodstream and it's being used for energy, right? So if you are having to produce lots and lots of insulin, it's like trying to open the gate. It's like jamming the key. It's just not happening. And you're just pushing harder. In the meantime, glucose is accumulating and sitting there in the bloodstream. It just cannot enter the cell. And remember, when it's staying in the bloodstream, it's causing damage.
Okay, great. I really love that analogy. I hope everyone watching or listening understands that as well. So your body releases more and more insulin because it's not doing its job properly. And then eventually it does work. And that's where that Homer score kind of comes in and tells us, well, yeah, it's working, but your poor body's having to, you know, pump all this insulin out. And then eventually over the years and years of doing this, that's when it tips over into diabetes, where, you know, it, your body just kind of goes kaputs and all this dysfunction starts to happen.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. And we are getting into solution mode. I feel like I want to say, how do we fix it? But let's just pause on that for a moment. I want to now bring cholesterol and our liver into this picture. Okay. So that is going on. What does liver now start to do, and why is cholesterol part of this metabolic story?
All right, so wipe the blackboard. I'm going to bring the new analogy, okay?
I love
So
your analogies, Yasmina, by the way. I wish we had a whiteboard right now.
liver is literally like a schoolyard monitor, right? So it's standing by and observing what is happening. And hopefully it doesn't have to do much. But when your blood glucose rises, it is like you've got a rogue kid and they're going around and whacking everyone. So that's sugar splatter marks, right? And it really is an emergency. You have to do something.
Okay,
So
so
at
your
what?
HbA1c rising is the kid with the stick running around.
Yeah, and whacking everyone, causing a mayhem, right? So glucose, so your liver has to step in. So that schoolyard monitor has to step in and change something. So it's almost like, okay, I'm going to go and redirect that kid to do something else. So what happens, you turn on metabolic pathways that will channel that glucose and turn it first into triglycerides and then likely into your
Ooh,
LDL
and we have a
cholesterol.
triglyceride measurement. Okay. So it turns the glucose into triglycerides. I love my computer's going crazy with all the signals today, isn't it? I love the heart one. There we go. So it turns it into triglycerides, which is a storage unit for energy.
Well, it's a one way to package your lipids, right? So liver is very, very smart. So besides doing what I've just described, it is also it can repackage your lipids. And triglycerides is one way of packaging them. That LDL cholesterol is another way
Which
of
is the
packaging them.
lousy. Remember, LDL is the lousy, meaning the
Yes.
unhealthy. And then is HDL, which is the healthy. That's the third way it can package these glucose molecules into these three different packages. Got it.
So, and what's going to happen is that, the liver, when it curtails that kid causing mayhem, and when, starts channeling it towards triglycerides, towards the LDL cholesterol, right? It's creating, we can discuss it later situation. In other words, it's, dealt with the emergency, your glucose is back into acceptable range, but in the background, your cholesterol is rising. And that's something that you will have to deal with eventually.
Okay. All right. And so that what I think that's really interesting about that is this idea that your liver is kind of stepping in to help. And so that's why this metabolic dysfunction or these inflexibility that we're seeing is a contributor to our rising cholesterol. Okay. And then what about inflammation? How does this metabolic inflexibility impact our inflammatory and inflammation levels as well?
Well, on several levels. So, having higher insulin means that you are going to, again, drive that generation of fat, promote fat formation, and you're also going to reorganize it around your abdomen. And once you deposit fat around your organs, that in itself is pro-inflammatory. So, if you are running on a higher cholesterol, then you've got a greater risk of that, particularly LDL cholesterol, seeping into the walls of your blood vessels and starting atherosclerotic changes. And that is also a background inflammation, this time in your blood vessels. And then where we're going next, I think, is what happens when you start depositing that fat also inside your liver and
Yes,
causing
which I
inflammation
don't
there.
know if a lot of people fully grasp this concept because I only really grasped it quite relatively recently. And considering I'm in this industry, I'm embarrassed to say it. But this concept that we actually, our liver physically gets fatter.
So remember, now that you've curtailed that runaway kid glucose and you've turned it into different kinds of lipids, whether it's triglycerides, LDL, there's a few other forms, right? So you've got to make a decision what you're going to do with it. And perhaps it's not the smartest thing to dump it all in your circulation, because that would be the equivalent, of that fat solidifying in your sink, right? It's not looking good and clogging up the pipes. So they go, okay, maybe I'm not going to pour it all down the sink. Maybe I'm going to store some of it. So that is what's happening. So the liver is then making a decision. It's like, I can't take the risk of just chucking it all out. I'm actually going to store some of it myself. So that's when you start accumulating, depositing fat inside your liver. And that is what that starts the process of that non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
And there are a couple of other markers that, if we're wanting to know, have we got NAFLD, or are we starting to inch along that way? What are the markers that we look out for that?
So the markers, the primary ones that we're looking at are those AST and ALT. So these are enzymes that are found in cells. And basically, if there's a cell damage, you spill those enzymes into the circulation, right? So the reason we can detect them in your blood test is because there's been some cell damage. You spill those enzymes into the circulation. We're detecting them on the blood, on the blood test. So AST is found in liver, brain, pancreas, heart, kidneys, lungs, right? So in the several, in several places. So it's not liver specific, but it is in liver cells as well. Whereas ALT is found mainly in liver, and your high ALT specifically talks about liver injury. So if you have your ALT that is high, and a lot higher than your AST, then you should be going, oh my goodness, my liver is really struggling here. I wonder if that is because I'm depositing that fat in the liver. So that is the, and then there is another marker that can often track with those, and that's that gamma GT. Gamma GT is an
GGT.
enzyme. Yeah. That is involved also in detoxification, and if there is a liver injury, we start to struggle with that as well.
So with Terry, who I've got up on the screen here, her metabolic markers were, very suggestive of pre-diabetes and some metabolic dysfunction. But I'm looking at her AST, which is at 18, and her ALT at 20. Now, the ALT is higher than the AST, as you said, but they're both well in the green below that 35 high mark. Is this suggesting NAFLD in your mind?
No, it's not. So she definitely has a metabolic issue, but it hasn't hit her liver yet.
Okay, so Terry, we are getting you early. This is a good thing. If you didn't change anything and you came back in to see Yasmina in 3 years, Yasmina, would you predict that these would then be up in the red?
Yep.
In 3 years,
Yeah.
what about in 1 year?
Probably not. It's a generally a slow creep. They would not, they may not be in the red, but they, so if you're look, if you have your bloods from a few years back, and if you're looking at the trend, and if that trend is steadily going up, that is a message that there is a process there that you have to pay attention to. So it's not just for the people that are sitting in the red. It's also for those who can have a look at their past bloods and who are seeing a trend up.
And you've just touched on such a key point that I really want to emphasize for everyone watching and listening, which is whether you're in the green or whether you're in the red, it's this concept of tracking and understanding these markers over time, whether you test once a year because everything's perfect, or whether you're testing 4 times a year because you've got some issues that you're trying to rectify. If you're sitting here and everything's perfect and in the green and you're thinking, oh gosh, why am I doing all of this? Know that this is fantastic because now you've got your benchmark and you know that, you know what your optimal is, and you can start tracking it over time because all of this is reversible through the lifestyle choices that we make. And I think that can be a really empowering and exciting concept, or it can be something that kind of deflates people and makes them feel a bit exasperated. But I want to hope that for most of you watching and listening, it's like, no, I actually have a whole bunch of levers that I can be pulling. My body's not agreeing with something I'm doing in my lifestyle. So let's work out what that is and then go about making some really simple targeted changes to start to reverse that trend.
Yeah. And look, you know, it's you and I have been in this boat. We do our own bloods and you go, oop, actually
Yeah.
need to start thinking about myself again. And it's just a really
Definitely.
good tool to direct your thinking, because you can find yourself traveling down the same road for a couple of years and, you know, just not really knowing that you're losing your way.
Okay, good. Agreed. 100% agreed. We touched on inflammation. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about CRP in this meta, when we're thinking about it? Because we're going to talk about inflammation in another video, but is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we moved on from that?
Yeah. So CRP is a very general inflammatory marker, and it's really, really important to look at it in the context. So if you've been sick, had sore throat, had skin infection, etc., it can drive your CRP up. But the CRP, if you wear well, and if your CRP is, you know, I'll give you some numbers, it can also, and in the context with some of those other blood tests that we have mentioned, can be a really important message. So CRP of less than one is associated with a low cardiovascular risk. 1 to 3, intermediate, and greater than 3, it's associated with higher cardiovascular risk, and especially so if you've got that and high cholesterol and high insulin, right? The other thing that people also go, but no, my cholesterol's fine, my insulin's fine, my metabolic is fine, you know, I wasn't sick and I've still got, you know, higher CRP. So think about where else it can be coming from. So how is your gut? Do you have any joint inflammation? You know, CRP can also low, you know, that simmering CRP can also be a harbinger of a kind of autoimmunity that has not been found, identified, labeled yet.
We also do have a lot of members with autoimmune challenges, particularly Hashis. I see a lot of Hashis chat in the community.
Yeah, so that simmering CRP can be associated with that as well.
And Terry's an interesting one. I haven't, is that not, she's got 0. Would that be, she's on medication or there could be a problem with the blood test? Have you ever seen a 0?
It's probably not 0-0. It's just how they're represented. Some pathologies will represent it like a lower than 0.4. They're presenting it here as a 0. It's a good thing. I am almost surprised that in the context of some of those challenges with blood glucose and insulin, etc., we are actually seeing that low CRP. But it's a, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree with you. Okay, so you've got that full hand that you just explained then. What about for someone that's sitting here and everything's perfect and in the green in their metabolic markers, but they're saying I'm overweight, or I am a little bit overweight or a lot overweight, and but all my metabolic markers look good and I've got this stubborn weight? What would you say to that member?
Okay, so one thing that we talked about is energy balance, right? And you can consume too many healthy calories. It is possible.
Absolutely.
And that is when we talk about the, you know, increasing plate sizes. And in next live session, I'm going to bring some plates that belong to my grandmother, and I'm going to compare them with the plates that, you know, a recent IKEA.
I will bring my dinner plates that we have here, and you bring your grandmother's and we can compare them. But when you're talking about energy balance, you're basically talking about calories in and calories out. Is what you're saying, Yasmina, if someone's sitting there, their metabolic markers look really good, but they're still struggling with their weight, it's almost like a rules of deduction where you're going, well, okay, the good news is you can knock metabolic dysfunction off your list of causes of your stubborn weight. So here's a bunch of other things that might be causing your stubborn weight. It's not because you're metabolically dysfunctional, but it could be because your energy balance is wrong. So you're just eating more calories than what your body needs, as simple and frustrating as that might be. That's one of the reasons.
And you know what? I just want to go that, you know, there's so much confusion when it comes to calories. So first concept is that calorie from Coke and calorie from carrot are not exactly the same thing. Right. But it is possible to get too many calories from, let's call them carrots. You know what I mean?
Or I can lose weight if I ate 800 calories of chocolate cake a day and that's all I ate for 6 weeks, I would lose weight. I would get very sick, but I would lose weight.
And undernourished. Exactly.
Yeah.
But you would also not lose weight if you ate 3,000 calories or 4,000 calories worth of nuts and olive oil.
And salads. Yeah. And you and I, you and I have spoken about this before. You know, when I was a trainer and really tracking my members really, really closely, I would have these members that completely cleaned up their diet and were having these amazing salads, but then they just didn't realize they were free pouring the olive oil. And one thing I would get those people to do who were getting really frustrated is I would put them on a home delivery meal service for 4 or 6 weeks, like a light and easy. And I would say that is calorie controlled. Just eat what is in that polystyrene box for a month. And you know that you're eating the exact calories that, you know, right for your body. And if you don't lose weight, then come back and see me. And they would always lose weight. But, you know, I'm not advocating that as far as like the quality of the food is never good and it's not sustainable, but it is an interesting litmus test. If you are absolutely fed up and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. You can try that because at least you know exactly how many calories you're eating.
Yeah. All right. So the other thing that I would say is that metabolic flexibility, going back to that word, is a key. And you got to think about it as really training your mitochondria. And I'm sure we will have people in our group that are saying, I was trying intermittent fasting and worked for a little while and then I plateaued. I was trying keto for a while and then I plateaued. Or I was even trying low fat for a while and it worked and then I plateaued, right? So that is why you have people who swear black and blue that particular diet is great for them. It doesn't mean that it's great for you. And you have a lot of people walking around saying, work for a while, doesn't work anymore. Right. So the annoying thing is that our metabolism, or the way our body works, can actually pull tricks on us. It can basically adjust to extract maximum energy out of whatever we're giving it. So for those people, it might not be one thing all the time. You actually have to push those mitochondria to keep adjusting. So you might alternate intermittent fasting with no fasting, with longer fasts. You might have a couple of days, you know, a week when you have moderate carbs. You have a couple of days a week when you have very low carbs. Mm-hmm. So again, pushing those mitochondria to constantly be learning how to use different sources of energy. So tricky, but some people really are just like that.
To help make it clearer for people about whether that's them or not, would you suggest that if someone's been, you know, on a weight loss journey, steadily losing weight and they hit that plateau, that's when it might be a good time to switch it up? So if you're if you're just on the start of your journey now, or now's not the time to just start, because to me that just, you know, it feels a bit confusing or overwhelming. But it's like, if you've been steadily losing weight for a considerable period of time and then you plateau, that's, I think, a great time to create this kind of switching around of your methods. I like that.
And I don't mean that, you know, I mean doing those changes within the same week. I'm not saying do one of
No.
those things for 3 months. I'm actually
Yep.
organizing your week that incorporates these different strategies.
Which we
So,
kind of do anyway, don't we? Just by virtue of the fact it's Friday and I'm going out, or I was too busy to have lunch that day, or whatever it might be.
Exactly.
That's good to hear. All right. So, so for this person, and then we're for this person who's metabolically okay but still struggling to lose weight, we've got that concept of check your energy balance, kind of shocking your system or switching it up a little bit. Is there anything else that you would recommend that this person tries?
Yeah, I mean, there are questions. Remember, context. So in this video, we're not talking about your thyroid. We will come back to it. But I think it's also important to have a look at what that is doing. If you are somebody who has had a lot of gut problems in your past, it's well worth thinking about your microbiome, because, you know, your microbes produce lots of metabolites that do matter. And then there is something that is totally within your control. That is sleep. When I say totally within your control, I don't mean you can put yourself to sleep, but you can start thinking and strategizing about it. And it's not just about hours in bed. Hours in bed are important, and I know quite a few people struggle just to get enough hours, but it is what happens. And sometimes we need to dig a little bit deeper into that. We will, in one of the sessions, we will talk about sleep data and HRV, etc. But I just want to peg it that perimenopause and menopause are associated with more dysregulated deep sleep and the dysregulated sleep breathing.
I can literally hear the members now going, oh my God. And just like, yes, totally. I think everyone that is at that stage of peri or menopause is nodding right now going, what is going on with my sleep?
Yeah. And so traditionally, somebody who has sleep apnea is, you know, 50 plus male that is stocky build, short neck, overweight. That's not what we're talking about. This is more subtle than your standard sleep apnea. It does happen. It can be revealed in the sleep data. We'll touch on that later. And it can make it more difficult for you to regulate a whole bunch of hormones that affect your metabolism.
Okay. The research around sleep and for weight management is quite profound. So apologies to all the shift workers out there, because I know that you're on a bit of a back foot, but certainly for anyone, whether your metabolic markers were completely out of whack or are in range, getting good quality sleep is a huge part of this program. And just on a personal note, I've always struggled with sleeping, and in the last 6 months I've just completely become fanatical. Just Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday nights I go to bed so early. They're my 3 nights a week that no matter what I prioritize sleep, and I plan my whole life around it now, and I'm finally getting these amazing nights sleep. And I can't tell you, when you do solve your sleep challenges, how good you feel. And it really is, it's such a different mindset to go, right, all right, that's it. I am really using this next 8 weeks to get on top of this sleep, as opposed to, you know, oh, I don't know, I'll try. And then you find yourself scrolling on your phone till really late at night. So, you know, take a leaf out of my book, guys, and really, really focus on it. Okay. I'm ready to shift gears. Are you ready to shift gears, Yasmina?
Yep, let's go.
All right, so that's our metabolic. That's a great biomarker. I hope you guys have enjoyed a little bit of nerding out and you're understanding your biomarkers better. Let's get into solution mode. All right, we're sitting here. Our markers are not doing what we want them to do. We want to improve our markers. We want to make sure that they're tracking in the right direction. Where do we begin is kind of the question I get asked a lot by the members. What levers do we have to pull, and what do we do, basically? Help us, Yasmina.
So first stop, diet. Again, You talk about intermittent fasting, and when we say that, people can really go, "Oh, but that's a long time." So start with 12 hours
8 p.m.
of
till
not eating.
8 a.m. is 12 hours of fasting.
Start with 12 hours, and you can extend it as as within your abilities, right?
Okay.
Savory breakfast. I think it's one of my top tips because it actually you start your day with a stable blood sugars. And when
Yep.
I say savory breakfast, guys, you guys who are eating gluten-free bread or who just be aware that you could be doing your savory breakfast, but you can be somewhat sabotaged by the bread choices that you make.
What bread? What should we be looking for? Do we want to see bits in the bread, grains and seeds?
Yes, your seedy breads are great, your high protein breads are great, and then again there is a quantity,
Sourdoughs?
so sorry.
Sourdough?
You can have sourdough. Again, there's darker sourdough versus just white sourdough, and it is about the ratios. So if you have more of that protein and green and less bread, you are starting on the right footing.
Okay.
Some of the meals that you have include porridge, but remember the porridge that we suggest is a steel-cut oat. So if it's not strictly savory, don't get stressed about it. We have taken things into account. We're giving you things that are low GI, so low glycemic index. So these are the things that are less likely to spike your blood sugar. So we have thought about these things.
Yeah. And so what we're talking about here, guys, these are all the levers that we can pull to improve our metabolic flexibility. So Yasmina and I, there's essentially a handful of them, which is basically your diet, your exercise, your supplements, your sleep and sunlight, and your stress. Like they're the kind of main five levers that we're going to chat through those in a bit of detail now. So if you're sitting here and you want to improve them, so following the plan that I've given you, this program that we've put together for the 8 weeks is specifically designed to improve metabolic flexibility, to lower cholesterol, to help manage weight, to lower inflammation levels, and to improve our immune system. So if you want to follow the plan, it's all there, but also a lot of us are not in a position to do that. So these tips and tricks we're giving you now, don't think you have to do all of them all at once. You could just pick the one thing, which might be the sleep example that I gave you, and be fanatical 3 nights a week. Or you might feel confident to cherry pick off a few other things as well. So sorry, I cut you off, Yasmina, but on the diet, you've just said savory breakfast. So fasting, so actually feeling hungry before you eat something. And making sure that hunger is true hunger below the neck and not a craving that you feel above the neck. What about drinks, Yasmina? Are we water, tea and coffee, low fat milk?
Look, I just have milk,
Just
and
regular milk. Okay.
I just have regular milk,
Okay.
but it's also what you put in there. So I'd be asking you not to sweeten your drinks. And I'm really sorry, guys, but honey is sugar, and what is it they call them, the molasses, that's sugar. Monk fruit is also sugar. That is all some kind of sugar. So ideally, we would be stepping you to be sugar-free. For those who are thinking about the sweetness, stevia can be used in moderation as a step down, but hopefully you adjust your taste so you don't need it. There is increasing evidence that your body is way too clever, and that just the taste of sweetness can trigger some of the metabolic effects that sugar itself does.
That's
So
crazy.
it is really, really crazy. I work with some sports people, and you know what? In the sports world, they've shown that you can use artificial sweeteners, etc., to upregulate. To increase the intake of actual glucose out of the gut, which marathon runners want to do, But so I'm just giving you know, just giving, showing you it's not entirely innocuous.
Yeah,
So,
okay. Well, and
yeah.
I would put back to you guys, members, those of you that have gone on the journey of getting off really sugary drinks, please post about it in the community. Please tell us how you did it. Because we'll have people watching here today that are having three energy drinks a day, having Coke for their afternoon slump, having kombucha because they think that's healthy, but kombucha is still full of sugar, guys, unfortunately, even though the gut bugs, the probiotics consume some of it. If it tastes sweet, it's going to have sugar in it. So I would love to know your journey for getting off it. Some people just go cold turkey, they have headaches for a few days. And then they're off and running. Other people switch to those like lightly flavored mineral waters that have kind of less than 10% sugars in them, maybe only about 5% sugars. I don't mind that. And then other people move away and actually put real fruit. So some raspberries or some blueberries or some slices of cucumber or a twist of lemon. Tell us how you weaned off your sugary drinks so that you're satisfied with water, herbal tea, coffee. I'd like to know. Okay, cool. All right, so that's a few diet ones. Are there any other diet ones that we should remind our members of?
I think we should stop there. I think we should move.
Okay.
They'll be in your you've got some great ideas in your food plans, and the community is well and truly alive. So I think we'll keep our tips, very manageable, but we're happy to discuss
Yeah,
further.
and low carb, like you'll notice everything where there's no massive bowls of pasta or so just keeping those simple carbohydrates down. Okay, supplements, Yasmina. Is there any what's the main supplement if we're metabolically inflexible that we could be taking?
Particularly if you're running high on insulin, which again means that you are insulin resistant. So remember, you are pushing to open that gate, that door for the glucose to enter the cell. And myo-inositol, let's think about myo-inositol as WD-40, right? So it's true. It's making you more insulin sensitive. It's going to oil that, door. So insulin is going to be able to, going to be able to turn that key with a greater ease. That's exactly what myo-inositol is. So it's a little bit WD-40 to your metabolism. It's making it easier for insulin to do its job. So it's insulin sensitizer. It's a super easy thing. It arrives as a powder, you can mix it up in a glass of water. You can sprinkle it on top of things. That's the easiest and most effective thing that you can do.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. And I'll pop all these in the cheat sheet so that you've got them. Okay. So the next one is exercise. This is probably one of the most powerful levers we can pull up there with diet when it comes to improving our metabolic flexibility. What are some of your tips around exercise, Yasmina?
So the first thing is what we call the non-exercise activity. And that is, the stuff that we said, move after eating. If you've just had your meal, put out your washing, go and collect your mail, do your chores around the house, just move within the first hour of eating. Remember, what we're doing then is your muscle is grabbing glucose straight out of the bloodstream. It can do that without help of insulin. It's in a very privileged position, the muscle, that it can help, it can grab glucose straight out of the bloodstream if it's working.
See, that blows my mind. If you sit here now and squeeze your thighs and just feel how much muscle is on your thighs, the fact that as soon as you start walking around and you've got to go up, I know you live up a few flights of stairs, those muscles start, filling up with blood. They don't even need insulin. They're basically mopping the glucose straight out of our bloodstream. So we've just had this big meal, our blood sugars are spiked, and all we have to do is get up and walk around for 5, 10 minutes, and our muscles are mopping that glucose up. Like, how did I not know this? It's crazy.
You and just about everyone else.
I can do that. I can shift my morning around so that instead of sitting on my butt after I eat, I actually go and do all my little errands. Like that's actually an enjoyable, easy thing to do. I'm not even having to add something or make my life harder. I love this tip.
So another thing is I want to challenge you to improve your step count by 20%.
My what?
And
My step count. Okay. So
so your step count, like, okay, many of you have the smart watches, they'll have a step count. If you don't have a smartwatch, you probably have a smartphone, which will also be able to be doing your step counts provided you're walking with your phone. Most of us do. And for those of you who don't have either, you know what? Like Kmart used to have those super cheap step counters that you can even just clip on your on shoes or in your belt or whatever.
So if you go into the health app that has a little heart on it and you tap into the health app, you'll be able to see something that's called steps. You'll be pleased to know I'm at 9,600 steps today. Thank you very much. Glad you didn't see this yesterday. But it's as simple as that. So we're kind of wanting to get around that 10,000 steps a day, but I don't care what your number is, but can you improve it by 20%?
And you know what? If you're sitting there and looking at it and going, my goodness, mine is 3,000, you are not alone. Australia is a car dependent society.
And the UK to our UK members.
I live in a place where everything is done by walking, and my daily step counts, and I can look at the stats, have just skyrocketed. So without, and this is, not exercise related, this is just everyday life. So,
And I think you raise a good point as well. To those of you that are feeling exasperated about your weight and you're like, I can't lose weight and it's stubborn and it's not shifting, that is another thing. Go and look at your average step count over the last 6 months. And if your average step count is low, like under that 5,000 per day, then just know that it's okay. Like this, there's a lever that can be pulled that you haven't been pulling. So your body isn't failing you. It's like I just, by virtue of the society we live in and the way our culture's constructed, I haven't been able to do the steps that my body needs me to do. But that's, there's, when it comes to exercise, there's a million ways to slice and dice it. You can do the structured exercise program that I've put in the plan. You can keep doing what you're doing. You can have Yasmina's suggestion, just counting your steps per day. It actually doesn't matter as long as you're doing something and that you've increased it that kind of 20% fitness and strength over the next 8 weeks.
sleep
Okay.
and sunlight. I think we'll talked about sleep. We'll
Yep.
go back to sleep. I'll just underline the importance of it, and we'll help you with it. And if you don't know, if you're exasperated, don't know what to do with your sleep, the first thing to do is spend 20 minutes in the sunlight without your sunglasses in the morning. It will help reset your circadian cycle. It will help regulate your sleep hormones. If you are exasperated, don't know where to start, just 20 minutes out in the bright morning light. That's all I'm going to ask you to do.
Okay, great. And the final one is stress, because Yasmina, stress and metabolic dysfunction go hand in hand. Stress spikes our blood sugar. So managing stress is really important if we're trying to improve our metabolic flexibility, correct?
Correct. And often we run into this. What is stress? Are you even aware of it? We meet an incredible number of people. When we talk to them, you go, oh my God, your life, you must be stressed out of your head, and go, no, I'm coping. And we're expected to. So one of the first things is that even if you think that you are not stressed, we want you to do these really simple exercises. Each of them takes maximum of 2 minutes. One is box breathing. So it's basically going to slow down the way you breathe, and it will stimulate your vagus nerve. And your vagus nerve is something that puts you into rest and digest state, right? So that takes maximum of 2 minutes. You can do it while waiting for your kettle to boil. And the next one is progressive muscle relaxation. We'll put a resource there, but basically, it's just you spend like 5 seconds with tensing every muscle in your body and then consciously relaxing it. And what happens is that you will realize where you have been holding your tension. So we just want to bring you back to your body, and we want to shift you from that everyday go, 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 go into a different state a couple of times a day and just build that awareness.
Brilliant. Amazing. All right, Yasmina, that was a great session. We covered a lot of ground. I hope you're listening, watching, still with us and not feeling overwhelmed. I guess, Yasmina, I want to make sure that at the end of each of these sessions that our members feel like, right, I know what my best next step is. And so I guess for everyone listening, and we're all on our own journey, I want to make sure that you all feel clear of what that next best step is. Do you have any tips or any kind of final parting thoughts to help our members be really clear on what they're doing?
All right, so I'm going to give you a sample day, okay?
Okay.
So wake up, get out, on your, even if your balcony or your garden, whatever it is, spend 20 minutes, including that breathing and just looking out at the sunshine. Then come back in and eat the recommended breakfast that we have it on the plan, and
You
maybe
might be
sprinkle some
fasting,
mayonnaise.
so it might be a bit later. It might not be early that you're eating, but yes, I'm hearing you. Yes. You
Doesn't
might have
matter what time.
exercised. Yep.
Yep. And sprinkle some myo-inositol on that, or have it dissolved in your water. And then, while you're waiting for your kettle to boil, do that breathing or progressive muscle relaxation. And when you're feeling the energy slump, perhaps in the afternoon, perhaps that's the time to go for another little walk. You will actually feel your energy lift up. So if you can in some way build this into your day, you have built most of our recommendations, and hopefully that hasn't been too challenging to do. So these are just sort of super simple steps that you can that I've just given you a little
Yep.
picture of the day that mops up most of what we have recommended.
I love that. And I want to echo that and say, if you're someone, someone on this program is just going, you know what, I'm 110% focused, I'm doing everything, more power to you, and that is amazing. And go for it. But if you're someone else that's like, my life is full, I'm busy, I'm feeling overwhelmed, even if you picked one thing that resonated with you that we spoke to you about, like, I can do that. I can move after eating. I can be fanatical about my sleep. I can get the myo-inositol. Even if you're just doing one of those things that we suggested, but you do it consistently for the next 8 weeks, your health will be moving in the right direction. And maybe once you've nailed that habit, you can have it stack something else on top of that, and on top of that, and on top of that again. We're not trying to lose, 10 kilos in 8 weeks. We're actually trying to just steadily improve that metabolic flexibility so that your body starts to respond well. And, this is a journey. So that would be my passing thought. And Yasmina, just a huge thank you for your time and your wisdom today. Loved chatting to you.
My pleasure. And I honestly hope that you guys are walking away and feeling empowered and feeling like there are things that you can do and will be doing over the next week or so.
And please share with us in the community maybe your key insights from the session, or if you've had any wins and you'd like to share what worked for you, please, please do that. And yeah, we'll see you in the next video, and we'll see you in the community, and we'll see you soon, Yasmina.
See you guys. Thank you for spending time with
Bye.
us. Bye.
Bye.